New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For a limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Will it hurt? Hunter dropped his spoon into the white sea of Cheerios and shifted in his chair. The 11-year-old didn't remember last time. Good. Only a little bit. My fork scraped against the plate as I moved half-eaten scrambled eggs around in a circle. Lying to Hunter weighed on my heart like a steel anchor, but I couldn't afford to be up front. There was too much at stake. His brow furrowed. That was the other thing about lying to my son. I wasn't good at it. He regarded me with worried eyes. Their deep brown mirrored his pleasing complexion. He'd inherited the gene from my feral ex-wife, along with her more exotic traits. Out of nervous habit, I ran a hand through my thinning gray hair, praying the words to convince him would come to me. Dad? Yes. I was grateful he spoke first. Are Kayla's mom and dad sad? I sighed with relief, a question I could answer honestly. Of course. They're worried they'll never see their daughter again. The police haven't been able to find her. That's why we need you. My teeth ground during the pause that followed. While the gears turned behind Hunter's eyes, the temptation to just tell him to do it gnawed at my resolve. But he had to go along with the plan willingly. I took off my glasses and wiped them clean with my shirt so I'd have something to do with my hands other than clenching them into fists. I want to help, he finally said. I put my glasses back on as Hunter came into focus. I could see his jaw was set. My heart swelled with pride for the first time since hearing of Kayla's kidnapping. I smiled. Tell Kayla's parents I'm gonna find her. My smile wilted. I wish I could tell them that. I stood, pressing my palms against the kitchen table and leaned forward. But what you are and what you're doing has to stay a secret. You tell no one. Understand? He nodded, then looked away, pulling strands of his curly hair taut in front of his eyes and fidgeting uncomfortably as if an electric current ran through his seat. I didn't mean to sound harsh. I just wanted to protect him. I'm sorry, it's just that, you know, this is the way it has to be. Failing to meet his gaze, he replied in almost a whisper. It's not that. I raised an eyebrow. Then what is it? What if I... His voice broke. Will I have to, you know, kill someone? No, I won't let that happen. But what if I do? Will I be a murderer? Look at me, I commanded. And he showed me his watery eyes. I won't let that happen. He sniffled and nodded. Do we have to go tonight? Yes, while there's still time. I was a psychology professor, not a law enforcement officer or military man. I couldn't even survive long playing Call of Duty with Hunter. If not for his rare genetic disorder, if lycanthropy counted as such, I'd have no business going into the woods tonight. Fortunately for me, tranquilizer guns were air-powered and easy to use. Following breakfast, I lined the gun sight with what I could find in the backyard and used a dummy dart to check the sights accurately. Tree trunks provided easy to hit, but murderous men and angry wolves weren't going to stand still for me. Kayla's kidnapper, the man the media dubbed the Deep Woods Killer, or DWK, knew the forest better than most people knew their own homes. He was so adept at covering his tracks that he convinced the authorities he'd moved on when he hadn't. They deemed the park safe. Now they know better. He's still there, but the German shepherds employed in the search for him couldn't pick up his trail, and soon lost Kayla's. The dog's noses were only superhuman. Come nightfall, Hunter's sense of smell will be supernatural. He wasted the sunny Sunday in his room, I interrupted his video games to coax him into eating lunch, but otherwise respected his space. There was a lot for him to process. For me, too. I put aside all the things that could go wrong. What remained fell into two categories. Hunter's job and my job. He'd snuff out Kayla and her kidnapper. I'd follow, put one dart in DWK and one dart in Hunter before my son's own killer instinct surfaced. Bring Kayla and Hunter home and tell the police where to find DWK. Simple. I ordered a pepperoni pizza for dinner, Hunter's favorite. My lame attempt at mundane conversation fell flat, and we ate in silence. Hunter asked to be excused after only eating a slice and left the crust. Guilt, a rock with sharp edges, settled in my stomach alongside the pizza. Though dusk had settled, I didn't want to leave for a few hours yet. I let my anxious son return to his PlayStation. If we rushed to Kayla's rescue now, there'd be people around. Hunter's secret had to be protected at all costs, and the dead of night meant no witnesses. We had time, I hoped. DWK kept his victims alive for a while. I didn't dare think about why. My mountain bike was already in the SUV's trunk. In the back seat, I hid the yellow taser and the tranquilizer gun loaded with a dart under a blanket. Hunter knew what I had and what they'd be used for, but he didn't have to spend the drive staring at them and ruminating. My windbreaker's pocket was a little too small for the hard case with the four remaining darts, but I jammed it in. When my Fitbit told me the time had come, Hunter was softly snoring in his desk chair, chin on his chest and arms hanging limply at his sides. His laptop screen had gone black from entering sleep mode. I swiped the touchpad and sighed. I'd hoped that at worst he'd be browsing adult sites. However, a Watch Again YouTube prompt stared me in the face for a werewolf hunting how-to video. Hunter was forbidden from watching this stuff, and the threat of having his PlayStation confiscated enforced the ban. I assured him that werewolf hunters armed with high-powered rifles and silver bullets was internet bullshit. It still gave root to his night terrors, and would be in the back, perhaps the forefront of his mind when we went to Kayla's rescue. I needed his focus on her. Hunter jumped when I gently put my hand on his shoulder. He slammed his laptop shut. I smiled, letting him believe I hadn't noticed what was on the screen.
"It's time?"
he asked, groggily, rubbing his eyes. I replied with a solemn nod. The glow of my phone's GPS map did little to dispel the oppressive darkness inside the SUV as we drove for 40 miles down an empty rural highway. A gibbous moon rose from beyond the tree line. It shone yellow and loomed large at first, but shrunk as it left the horizon behind. Shortly after 11, we pulled into the unpaved parking lot. Kayla's family had come here just yesterday. There was no reason not to. The only dangerous predator to roam this state park in over a century was DWK, and he was supposedly long gone. All Kayla had to do was briefly wander from her family's sight, and most of his work was done for him. Had I known, Hunter and I would have come after the search stopped for the night, but like the rest of the public, I didn't find out she'd disappeared until early this morning. Hunter held the bright LED flashlight for me as I took my bike from the trunk. The dark muted the Trek's metallic red sheen into a maroon of dried blood. I leaned it against the bumper, then checked that its thick, all-terrain tires were fully inflated. I took off my Fitbit and strapped it tightly to Hunter's wrist. He winced. "Sorry," I said. "I have to make sure it stays on when you change."
"I know,"
he replied, resigned to the fact, but trying vainly to get his pinky under the band. He kept the light focused on me and watched through narrow eyes when I brought out the tranquilizer gun. I put my arm through the strap, and it rested comfortably on my shoulders. Hunter stood the flashlight on the ground, took off his socks and Nikes, and stripped to his boxers. I threw his clothes in the back seat. He crossed his arms over his chest, shivering in the crisp April air. "I need a second, Hunter,"
Can you check the head of the trail for any clues? Something the cops might have missed? I pointed behind him, where the police had erected a trail closed sign. Okay, he replied through chattering teeth. As we walked away, I quickly slipped out the taser from the back seat. He turned to me. Dad? Sorry, Hunter. I fired. Two tiny darts at the end of wires shot out and pierced the skin of his bare abdomen. The taser made a rapid clicking noise as the electrical current entered his body. My eardrums throbbed from his high-pitched shriek, and he fell face first into the gravel. I wiped tears from my eyes. How I wish the full moon triggered the transformation, like in the movies. It did happen at night to Hunter, if his pain threshold was shattered. The ground muffled his pitiful sobs for a few moments that seemed like millennia. When he finally lifted his head, a guttural growl escaped his distended maw. Canines, long, pearly white, and sharp as spears, sprouted from red gums. It took all my will not to turn away when his cold, glowing eyes met mine. The thoughtful human in Hunter wouldn't remain much longer. Cracks, pops, and tearing accompanied the transformation as bone lost its shape and flesh twisted, contracted, and stretched. The taser darts popped out of his body, the shape of which was neither that of a boy or a wolf, but a malformed abomination in between. Swallowing bile forced up from my churning stomach, I turned to toss the taser into the SUV. He crouched, lifted his torso on humanoid arms that extended into paw hands with stubby fingers, each tipped by a long black nail. The Fitbit clung to his furry left wrist. I pulled out the crucial sheet of loose-leaf paper from my jeans, unfolding it, and placed it on the ground, stepping on the edge so it wouldn't blow away. The paper contained Kayla's crude drawing of Hunter. She'd recently passed it to him in class. She was his crush, so he'd saved it. On all fours, he stepped out of his boxers, leaned forward, and sniffed the paper with his black-tipped snout for her scent. He then spun around and bounded into the woods. I picked up the flashlight and ran for the bike, jamming my phone into its handlebar-mounted holder. The flashlight attached to the mount beside it and became a headlight. A breeze carried Kayla's drawing away, but if my plan worked, she'd live to make Hunter another one. The find by Fitbit creators never could have imagined their app to locate a lost device being used to track a werewolf. It did the job, however. I pedaled onto the trail with all the strength my legs could muster, keeping the display's blue arrow, me, pointed at the blinking green dot, the Fitbit. The dot separated further from the arrow. I veered off the trail and into the bushes to keep the dot's center screen, navigating the dense trees through a series of sharp turns. The bike had been designed for the roughest terrain. I couldn't say the same about my middle-aged self. With luck, my glasses stayed on as twigs and leafy branches whipped my face. At one point, a tall thorn bush drew blood from my cheek. The seat's padding did little time to spare my sore rear to constant bumps. Keeping up through its toll, lungs straining for more oxygen with each breath, unbearable aching in my legs, relief and alarm dueled in my mind when the dot came to a stop. Hunter wasn't in sight. Had the Fitbit finally fallen off of him? Or had he found Kayla? If the latter, was she still alive? As though in reply, a high-pitched shrieking echoed through the trees. I followed the sound over a hill crest. My phone showed the triangle rapidly closing in on the dot. I looked up from the display to see Kayla less than 10 feet away and running towards me. Squeezing the brakes wasn't enough to stop my downhill momentum. To avoid hitting her, I turned the wheel hard left. My splayed legs failed to keep the skidding bike and me from tipping over. I hit the dirt hard, and pain shot through my back, where the butt of the tranquilizer gun dug in. Expletive flowed from my lips. Kayla stood over me, clothes in tatters, face barely recognizable under tear-streaked grime and dirty matted hair hanging over her panicked eyes. "Wolf!" she gasped, pointing behind her. I caught my breath. "Are you all right?" Surging adrenaline got me to my feet, and I dusted myself off. "Wolf," she repeated, as if it was the only word she knew. I took the gun off my shoulder. It seemed intact upon a quick examination. The hard case still in my windbreaker pocket, likely protecting my extra darts, so I didn't take precious seconds to check. "Stay here," I said. Kayla dropped to the ground, hugging her knees to her chest. "You'll be okay." I was talking to myself as much as to her. "I'm coming back." A spiderweb of cracks stretched across my phone's screen, but it still lit up. The triangle was almost on top of the dot. I detached the flashlight from my bike and swept the beam around. It revealed only foliage, but faint growls and a man's grunting reached my ears. I pocketed the phone and flashlight pointed forward in one hand, gun ready to fire in the other, following the sounds of an area of rock and dense brush. It took careful examination, poking my flashlight beam between clusters of leaves before it touched upon a cave mouth. Its blackness swallowed the light, but the echoes clearly came from there. Taking a breath, I pulled away the thick foliage concealing the entrance, crouched down, and ventured inside. An awful stench, a man's body odor, assaulted my nose. Was that from the DWK or me? Despite the cool air, sweat soaked my skin, and the close confines could have been making me smell my own fear. The ceiling lowered as I progressed, eventually forcing me to my knees, and the growling grew louder, as did the man's grunts. A mad thrashing warned I was only yards away from a life-and-death battle. The space grew until I could stand again, then briefly narrowed. I shuffled ahead sideways to enter a large cavern, well lit by a tipped-over camp lantern. Dropping my flashlight, I emptied both hands to aim my gun at the man pinned beneath Hunter's weight. Long, unkempt hair spilled from the man's head, and a bird's nest tangle of beard hid his chin. The deep woods killer, looking exactly like the online sketches of him. Save for the Fitbit around his foreleg, Hunter was indistinguishable from any other large, mottled, grain-white-furred wolf. Multiple gnashes, the width of Hunter's nails, stretched down DWK's camo jacket from chest to belly, soaking in red. A layer of cave-floor dirt covered both man and wolf. DWK struggled so violently to wrench his bloody arm from between Hunter's jaws, I almost didn't notice the man had worked his other hand around the hilt of a belt-sheathed hunting knife. I tried to keep him in my gun sight, but my hands trembled too badly. If I missed and tranquilized Hunter first, we were both dead. DWK wasn't going to idly stand by while I reloaded. Unaware of my presence, DWK grunted in triumph as he freed the knife. Hunter didn't have to be hit with a silver bullet to die. He was far from invulnerable. I prayed as I pulled the trigger. With a whoosh, the weapon launched its dart. It stuck in DWK's side. His head turned in my direction. He briefly appeared confused before his knife fell to the floor and his eyes closed, head lolling to the side, body motionless. His chest still rose and fell. Good. I didn't want to kill a human being, even though DWK didn't act like one. "Great job, Hunter's angry yellow eyes bored into me as he stepped off DWK and approached me with slow, deliberate movements. His snarl revealed dagger-sharp teeth, dripping saliva, and stained crimson with DWK's blood. Hunter wasn't home. I'd imagined this scenario, planned to soothe Hunter with a soft voice while I reloaded. But the now worthless gun slipped from my hands as terror clouded my realization. "Hunter, listen to me." He drew closer, his panting almost drowned out my heart's thundering beat as it threatened to burst from my chest. I regained my wits and turned to run, but it was too late. Hunter pounced. My howl of agony reverberated in the cavern as his jaws closed on the soft flesh of my calf. I fell on my stomach and lost my glasses, trying to kick my leg free, only magnified the pain. Tears of agony streamed down my cheeks as I jammed my other foot into Hunter's snout to no avail. The darts! I tore my windbreaker pocket to get the case off, fumbling to open it, and pulled out a dart. Twisting around, I squinted at Hunter's blurry gray form. I sat up just enough so my outstretched arms could jam the dart into what I thought was Hunter's foreleg. It stuck through the fur, but nothing happened. The tranquilizer was formulated to bring down a 300-pound deer. Hunter weighed nowhere near as much, but only God knew what kind of resistance a werewolf had. I was going to die for assuming something abnormal would react normally to the tranq. Who would take care of Hunter? Who on earth could? The world spun and strength drained from my body. From the ocean of despair and darkness about to engulf me, an idea surfaced. What if the problem wasn't the tranquilizer, but where I administered it? I felt around the dirt until finding my glasses and putting them on. One lens remained in the frame, but that was enough. Powered by my will to live and love for my son, I released a second dart from the case and jabbed it into Hunter's throat. He whimpered, and the pressure on my leg disappeared. His dulling eyes half closed, and he came to rest on his side, my thigh a pillow for his head. Within moments, he was snoring. I slid out of the way and sat up, immediately assaulted by vertigo. Hunter's body jerked violently. His bones began to snap, ridges rising and falling beneath his stretching, balding skin. But he remained unconscious. Dawn was still a long way off. The tranquilizers must have triggered the transformation. Something I hoped would happen but couldn't know. I shed my windbreaker and wrapped it around my wound. Tightening it into a tourniquet hurt like hell but stemmed the bleeding. My vision cleared and the world steadied, the pain dulled, or I'd simply grown accustomed to it. The two empty darts in Hunter's flesh left raised little wounds when I plucked them out. I'd tell Hunter to explain them away along with the taser marks as scratched bug bites. I put the darts back in the case. I took the Fitbit off his wrist, put it on mine, and dragged my body to the cavern wall. Its rocky protrusions helped me pull myself to my feet. Hobbling back to where Hunter lay, I dressed him in my t-shirt. It was huge on him, hanging as low as a nightgown, hopefully providing protection from scrapes as we made our escape. There was no recourse but to prop up his limp body through the narrow crevice and drag it behind me at the low ceiling point. Once in the open, I collapsed with him on my back. There was no way in hell we'd make it back to the SUV. My phone showed two precious bars, and I called 911. Kayla's parents could have flooded the hospital with their tears of joy upon reuniting with her. As my wounded leg was tended to, the emergency staff dressed Hunter in a gown and wheeled him into another area to look him over. He slept soundly through it. My legs suffered no permanent damage, and crutches would keep me mobile until I healed. I refused to stay the night for observation or receive rabies shots, however, alarming the doctor. Unable to force treatment on me, he could only shake his head. The police had waited until the ambulance got me to the hospital to interview me at length. They weren't concerned about my practice of hunting deer at night with a tranquilizer gun. That wasn't illegal or unheard of, nor was having your son with you. Riding a bike into the woods was not what deer hunters did, but the police didn't find my trek, or, more likely, found it, but assigned it no importance. In my condition, I wouldn't be searching for my bike and riding it out of the woods anytime soon, but I wasn't going to ask the cops to get it for me. Dumb luck, I told them, brought me near DWK's cave, and Kayla's cries led me inside. After all, how could I have possibly tracked him down when all those seasoned searchers and their sniffer dogs couldn't? I described Hunter and I's scuffle with DWK as his big dog, the one that bit me. That explained my wound as well as Hunter's various cuts, bruises, and abrasions, though not why he was undressed. The shapeshifter's clothes changed with him, another movie fantasy I wish was true. I could only tell the police that everything happened so fast it was all a blur. The important thing was that I managed to get a tranquilizer dart in DWK before he could plunge his knife into Hunter or me. They couldn't wake Hunter to question him, because he was obviously exhausted by the emotional trauma. I still added that a traumatic experience can make children act out strangely, stripping off their clothes, for example. The air was heavy with unspoken skepticism, though psychology represented my area of expertise. DWK, now in custody, was still out cold when they found him, and apparently mauled by his own dog, though they had yet to come across a dog in the vicinity. I had no doubt my version of evidence would prove more credible than a lunatic's story of a giant wolf, should DWK relate what happened. There were no wolves in the area. Ever. I played with my phone on an uncomfortable bed as 20 minutes passed, then 40. They were taking a long time with Hunter, even by hospital standards. With the aid of crutches, I made my way over to the nurse's station, where a smiling young woman in a lab coat met me. "Are you Hunter's father?" she asked. "Yes. Where is he? What's taking so long?" "He's right down the hall." She gestured to her left. "I'm Dr. Singh." Singh seemed too nice to be a doctor or to even have a driver's license. "I had great difficulty waking your son," she said, "so I ordered blood work done on him." "Blood work?" I snapped. "There's nothing wrong with him." The doctor's smile melted away. "You signed the consent for your son's treatment, sir." "Probably. I signed a number of papers on arrival." "Hunter somehow ingested a benzodiazepine sedative," she said matter-of-factly. "Do you keep Valium or some other tranquilizing medication in your home?" I replied with a curt no, not having planned on the hospital doing anything to Hunter, much less blood work. I rescued Kayla from the Deep Woods killer, but now I have to worry about a visit from the Office of Children's Welfare. What the hell? I hobbled in the direction the doctor had pointed and came to an area sectioned off into rooms by curtains. From behind one, I heard a female voice coo. "This may hurt a little." Hunter's protests morphed into a piercing cry. I ditched the crutches and limped past the curtain. Hunter was in his bed, eyes screwed shut and tears leaking out of the corners. A thick needle attached tubing to his wrist. "Just setting up an IV," said the nurse, a thin, older woman hovering over him. "Sorry to cause your son so much discomfort, but I had trouble finding a vein." A growl rose from deep within Hunter's throat, and he opened his eyes. They glowed yellow, like the gibbous moon shining through the window.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.